Hey everybody, this is the second in our post-ASCO prostate cancer series, and we're talking about the VISION trial. I'm joined with Silke Gillison and Chris Sweeney, and of course Brian.
Of course,
the Silke and Chris are going to do most of the talking. Chris, do you want to kick off? So the study was presented as a plenary session at ASCO. It was a radionuclide trial. We've had radium-223 before. Should we talk about the VISION trial to start with? And then Silke, I might come and ask you about what it means in the wider radionuclide space.
So radionuclides are with prostate cancer, and it's not that new because we do, as you point out, have radium, which targets where calcium goes, because radium's in the same part of the periodic table and emits some radiation in bony metastases. Survival benefit there. So radionuclides are not new to the prostate cancer field, and it is definitely a standard therapy for patients who have bone disease without soft tissue disease or up to a centimeter or two of node disease. So lutetium PSMA is patients who have PSMA-expressing disease, and lutetium is bound to a protein that identifies and binds to PSMA-expressing prostate cancer cells. There are other cells that express PSMA, like the parotid gland and some of the liver, and angiogenic vessels. But it is prostate-specific membrane antigen, PSMA. Having said that, it is actually folate hydrolase, so it's actually not prostate-specific really at all. So this study was in patients who got had most of their therapy. They'd had either a hormone or docetaxel, or not docetaxel eligible really, and were could have had cabazitaxel. And it was lutetium PSMA plus standard of care versus standard of care. And there was a significant improvement in radiographic progression-free survival and overall survival. I'm just going to pause and say the first thing I want to say is that there was the Australian study that compared the same drug and pretty much the same patient population, but compared it with cabazitaxel. It was a PFS benefit there, but the study was randomized phase two and not powered for overall survival. So even up against a standard of care, a true standard of care, cabazitaxel, the drug looked relatively good. They were very specific in the ANZUP study in who got on the study. They had to be FDG negative, basically, and PSMA PET positive. So excluding patients who had disease not likely to be targeted and benefit from the radionuclide targeting the where if there wasn't enough PSMA.
Chris, can I jump in for Brian and Tom, just to know. So that was interesting because I talked to Michael Hoffman, and he said he lost kind of 30% about of his patients just based on the PSMA PET-CT, whereas in the VISION trial, so the one that we're talking about now, it was only about 15% of the of the patients who couldn't go into the trial based on PSMA PET-CT characteristics. I think that's pretty interesting. So there was already a kind of a difference in the selection of patients who were considered positive.
Why would that be, Silke? Is there...
Because Michael Hoffman was very strict, so he wanted a certain SOOF, and as Chris already mentioned, he did also the FDG PET to exclude patients who were glucose positive and PSMA negative.
Yeah.
And that wasn't done in the VISION trial.
Got it.
And the reason for that, there are two things I think we need to talk about, is the PSMA PET as a companion diagnostic, should it be? And the FDA looked at it and they said, okay, we can't get everyone to have a PSMA PET and an FDG PET for this study. So they said, if you have some PSMA PET positivity and not too much non-discordant PSMA PET negative disease, you can go on. So obviously that's about that 15% delta between the two studies. So there are two things I have issues with we should talk about. The term standard of care is a huge issue with that. So the standard of care were basically all the agents in the exclusion criteria, radium, cabazitaxel, docetaxel. Most of the patients who got this were either abiraterone after enzalutamide, or enzalutamide after abiraterone, or maybe they got dexamethasone because they'd explored all options. So it was a minimally active control. And the reason for that is because both arms got this minimally active control and you couldn't give doci or cabazi or radium with the lutetium PSMA.
Chris, can I say something? So all the patients had one taxane. as an inclusion. Yep. So I think docetaxel is not the big issue here. It's really cabazitaxel
or radium.
Because I think from that standpoint, it was kind of clean because everyone had at least one taxane or one endocrine agent.
So for sure. But the radium and cabazitaxel may not have been given.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. They were good standards of care, which the patients didn't get.
Right, exactly.
So expand on that further. So in the radium study, as I remember, it was the same sort of standard of care as the control arm.
But we didn't, absolutely. So
I know the drugs didn't exist, but.
Exactly. Yeah. But let's call it, I think the term standard of care is a misnomer. They're not agents I would have chosen if I was trying to compare it with.
I guess the real question is: Does it matter? Does it diminish your opinion of activity of the drug or how you use it?
No, the answer: the drug works,
yep.
And the drug was designed from a company that was trying to show the drug works to get it approved. Let's actually call it what it is. It's not a standard of care. It was designed to show activity. The other thing is, we know the drug works. It's just doing a study to show it works. The number of patients in the dropout speaks to the fact, and another bugbear of mine is, there was so much press around lutetium PSMA because all the reports were overemphasizing the extreme responders. And that's why then they would go and see the nuclear med people, and they had such a huge dropout because there was such a true believing in the data. So this drug is going to work, but people didn't want to go on the study and they dropped out. They had to fix that out. So it speaks to the background of what went into this. Lutetium PSMA is another chess piece on the chessboard. It's great. Let's put it in context. It didn't cure patients. It's a good therapy like all our other therapies. It just didn't replace anything. It's another chess piece on the chessboard. Yeah. And we just need to put it in context.
Got it.
Yeah, but I would also say to be fair, I think, you know, yes, standard of care, I guess that's not the right expression, but you also saw that even after the study in the so-called standard of care arm, you saw that only about, I forgot, 18 or 20% of the patients received chemotherapy. So maybe there were really, some of them were not eligible for chemotherapy and they were eligible for the PSMA PET.
For sure, absolutely. And these were patients who were chemo fit when they went on the were trial fit to go on. Absolutely. Right. Call it what it is, though.
I guess from a global perspective, some countries may or may not have access to second line cabazitaxel. And
I think nearly everyone has cabazitaxel, but not everyone's chemo fit.
I mean,
radium's a bit of a mixed story as to its availability.
We're going to come to radium in a second. But, you know, I guess Brian and I have done lots of sunitinib trials. In fact, I think the last one's closed now, but only relatively recently. and I think what we tend to do under those circumstances is we compare all the trials that used an imperfect control arm almost against each other, which allows us to make indirect comparisons of axi-pembro, cabo, nevo. So I think we can go back and say there's some activity in context. The question I got for
I just wanted to say that that's really, I think, very interesting because I looked at that for just a publication right now, and it's really interesting if you look at PROFOUND and CART and this lutetium PSMA VISION trial now. So I think the benefit is really very similar, and also actually the OS in the control arms are really very similar. So I think this is kind of reassuring, that probably get really a benefit of all of these drugs, and that we have now a new drug that is that will be approved hopefully soon. So I think I'm pretty positive, and I totally agree with Chris that best standard of care is probably not the right expression, but I think it doesn't take away the activity and also the tolerability of the drug.
And absolutely, and don't forget, the Australian study did compare with cabazitaxel, evidence of that. Can we turn the conversation to, should the PSMA PET be a companion diagnostic?
We can do that.
I'm going to propose you could go Mary Ellen Taplin's approach. Don't worry about it because most patients who went in were able to get on, and most patients will probably get a benefit. maybe the treatment effect would go down, maybe not like the 0.68, sure, to more like 0.75 in an unselected manner. Or would you actually get, if you had a much better and developed it as companion diagnostic, had the right cut point for the right amount of disease, would the treatment effect be higher? So I'm going to ask Silke, do you think we should develop a better cut point, define the best cut point with PSMA PET to work out to maximize efficacy and minimize futility?
So I have to say, I'm the only patients that I'm really kind of concerned about are the patients with the liver metastasis, because there are liver metastases that have a high SUF in the PSMA PET CT, and they seem to respond pretty well. And then you have these liver metastases that are negative in the PSMA PET scan or low PSMA. So these patients, I personally would prefer to give a chemotherapy. So I have to say I'm specifically concerned about the liver mets, to be honest.
Let me tell you what I think, Chris. So I think that...
Tell me what you think.
Yeah, so I think by widening the net and ignoring the biomarker is a mistake in broad terms in cancer medicine.
Agree.
And so I think... It's not always, I think drug development has not always focused on biomarkers correctly. But if you've gone down this route and then you ignore it because the data is pretty good and you broaden that net in an uncertain population, I just think that's the wrong broad direction which we should go in.
Tom, I would maybe try to challenge that, even if that's difficult if you said that. But it's a PSMA PET CT, right? There is some data from Johan de Bono that maybe the PSMA expression, really, if you look in tissue, would be higher. So there is a bit the question, you know, it's not a biomarker where you looked in the tissue like most of your biomarkers or in ctDNA, whatever, but it's just a bit ruder, right?
You could just do a small study in 30 patients who are PSMA PET negative of the agent, right? And just see if you have any activity, right? That'll tell you.
That's. But actually, I'm going to put my conspiracy theory hat on. So these decisions
are
made...
I'm keen to avoid that if possible.
Yeah, let's go with it. But you're interested here, aren't you? So these decisions are made by people who are in the business unit, the medical team, saying, okay, what's our market share if we go with a PSMA-specific group versus a little bit more of a looser criteria? And then there's the conversation with the FDA. What's the overall patient benefit? So there are many factors that go into these decisions. But I'm with you, Tom. I would like a bit of a purist to actually define the best cut point.
Let me try and take that differently, Silke. It sounds like you think you've got completely the wrong biomarker. and therefore, I agree completely. If you've got completely the wrong biomarker, let's start again and find the right biomarker.
I don't think it worked in all the trials. So it's not the wrong biomarker. It's just we just don't know. It's a little bit like the story from breast cancer, right? So is the really the low estrogen receptor? Does that really mean that someone doesn't respond to hormone?
It's just an imperfect biomarker.
Right?
Like
it's an imperfect. It's not. It's not the wrong one. But
so let's pursue it.
Not perfect.
Let's pursue it and get it right then. Let's pursue it.
Okay. Well, what did I say at the very beginning? Define the best cut point.
Yeah.
And I'm supportive. And I'm supportive of that approach.
Yeah.
Can we mark this day down? Tom and Chris agree.
Are there studies going on looking at that, looking at different cut points, looking at negative patients? I mean, that's the
I don't think so. I'm not aware of that. Brian. What is actually happening is a whole host of new agents, a whole bunch of new radio ligands are being developed.
Yeah.
With different antibodies to target and different actinium and thorium and the other ones that are. So there's going to be a whole wave of these. Which one's going to be better? I don't know. But there's a whole host being developed in different situations.
That's
going to be worked out.
Brian, we could go in. I mean, if there is interest, the Vision studies is there, and you could go and look at who has a high SUF versus low SUF, whatever cutoff you using, 20 or whatever. So the data would be there, right?
It's just
sounds
a
question.
Good idea.
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah, the patients who were below wouldn't have made it in, right? Patients who
were not. Exactly.
And so I'm just going to say we as investigators have to push for this. And if we're on steering committees, we actually have to be a little bit more vocal on these things. This whole which patients should get a PARP inhibitor and the developers of olaparib have got this slew of potential mutations that may benefit, but it's really driven by mostly by the BRCA and the BRCA1 and BRCA2, and all the other is at best iffy data.
That sounds like a podcast for a different day, Chris.
I'm calling out the topic that we, as the investigators, need to actually push for more rigorous biomarker development.
Yeah, agreed. We agree. So I don't know if we're going to move on to radium, but I guess the question at the end of the day, assume it's approved, assume you can get PSMA PETs whenever and wherever you want. How are you going to use this chess piece? Chris, you can start. Like how and when, I guess, is really the question. When in the course of CRPC?
I think my goal is to get as many therapies in as possible. Mm-hmm. If they're chemo fit, get the docetaxel and the cabazitaxel in at some stage. If they've got a BRCA mutation, work at, get their profiling and see if they're a PARP inhibitor candidate. I actually probably would use it prior. Well, it's got, depends what the label comes out as, but I'm hopeful it's a little bit broad and we could use it.
Yeah, assume it's broad. Assume you can use it wherever you want.
I would probably use it before chemotherapy in a patient who has clear PSMA PET positivity. AE profile is less and activity as good, if not better.
Yeah.
If you got the right cut point.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay. How about you?
So I have to say, we had it available as expanded access, and before that, we could send patients to Germany. So, you know, I have to say the same thing. I guess we did it after one novel endokinase and one chemo at least. So, how it was done here. And then most patients said before they do a second chemo, they want to do that PSMA PET, lutetium. And I guess that's a reasonable approach, except again, in maybe some patients who have a hyper scan, they were excluded in the VISION trial. I think this is very important because then otherwise you get really probably a lot of myeloid toxicity. And that's what our nuclear medicine people would say. And again, as I said, the patients with the liver meds that don't have really low PSMA expression there, I would be a bit careful.
And just to also be very clear, I have not seen anything to suggest that patients cannot tolerate cabazitaxel because of potential bone marrow toxicity after they've had any of the radionuclides.
What's the future of radium-223, Chris?
Sorry?
What's the future of radium-223?
I reckon it's radium-223 is challenged by the fact that PSA doesn't go down in most patients, and they may actually have some soft tissue progression on therapy, and it's really hard to keep the patient on after the 6 doses where there is the benefit if the PSA is going up. So you grit your teeth, you rip it and grip it, actually.
So you think it'll be replaced largely then?
I think so, because it's just easier and less stress because everyone wants to see the PSA go down.
Yeah.
And the lutetium PSMA does that.
Listen, everybody.
PSA.
I think we're going to call it. Sweet. Any more questions, Brian?
No, it was a good discussion. Good discussion. Right,
thank you both very much indeed. Going to see you all soon.
Ciao.
Cheers, everyone.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.